So good to have you back with us at the Better Off Podcast, sponsored by Independence Blue Cross. We are here to help you get a feel for what are you better off doing? You see so much in your news feeds. You hear all these different studies. What are you better off doing? And today, we really want to dive into what's right up here in your head. Sometimes, do you have some struggles? I know, I struggle with day-to-day stuff. We all do as people. But maybe you struggle a little bit more than someone else. So what are you better off doing if that's you? And we have two awesome local folks from the community here to help us navigate through that. We have Dr. Ryan Connolly with us. You're a psychiatrist, and you're also a behavioral health medical director at Independence Blue Cross. And I was fascinated how you also helped our veterans at the Department of Veterans Affairs. And I'm also happy to have you, Brenda, with us. This is Brenda Shelton Dunstan, and what you do is you bring your experience to what you do now. So you have experience managing nursing homes, community health centers, and you're bringing that into the community. You're leading the Black Woman Health Alliance, and you help bring in that mental health wellness program through something that we're going to talk about, the creating a legacy through mind, body, and spirit. Let's get right into it, guys. This time of the year, sometimes you can really struggle a little bit, and everyone's different. I have some family that struggle a little bit from losses in their life. Earlier this year, my aunt lost her husband. She's still really struggling with this. And some days, she's great. She has good days, and other days, she has bad days. So as someone that I see firsthand having a family member that's struggling a bit, what am I better off doing? Am I better off helping myself, or should I suggest she go somewhere? And I wouldn't even know where to suggest. Dr. Connolly, how would I go about that?
Well, I mean, I think there's probably no wrong answer as long as we do something, right? I mean, I think when we see people we're a little bit worried about, I think the best thing to do is to have a conversation with them. I think a lot of times people spend a lot of effort and anxiety wondering what's the best way to talk to people about these things because it's uncomfortable. Nobody really wants to have that conversation. A lot of people find it difficult to talk about. But I think just reaching out and just even something as simple as, you know, how are you doing? Are you okay? I've been a little bit concerned about you. I think it goes a long way. It can help people feel cared for. It can, like, give them an opening. They're not going to come to you usually and say, I'm having a rough time, right? So I think helping people feel like they can start to have that conversation is the most important part. Where it goes from there, there's lots of answers. But I think that we're always better off reaching out to people and asking than wondering about what we should do.
When you say it like that, it sounds so simple. And I'll admit, my mom, myself, we've just been ignoring it. We've been seeing it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know why I didn't think just in my head to say, just sit down a minute. Hey, what can I do? I know you're still hurt and you're still struggling. Let's talk about that for a minute.
The conversation, yes, is the start. Mm-hmm. But how do I start that conversation? I love you. I care for you. I'm seeing some things. How do you feel? It's a little different. You want to share with me? So the conversation, having that conversation, normalizing the conversation, comfort level, it's not easy, but we have to start. However, knowing our limitations.
I mean, I have to agree with you. I mean, I think stigma is a big part of why it's uncomfortable to talk about these things, right? But I think one of the things you said that was great is making sure we tell people, this is coming from me, in a sense. Like, mm-hmm. I'm worried about you. I want to help. It's not a conversation about what's wrong with you, right? Because that feels bad, right? And as you said, we have limitations. And these conversations don't always work on the first shot, right? You know, the first time people may, again, because of stigma, resistance, or just being uncomfortable, shut it down. They don't want to talk about it. But as long as we let them know we're kind of here for them, maybe it works the second time around, right? But it is important to do that.
And when I said spoke on the limitations, mm-hmm. we're not necessarily the expert, knowing when to possibly say, where there are suicidal tendencies or you hear a person wanting to harm themselves, it's time to refer to a professional. We know our limitations, and that's the important, that's just really important as well, sharing information about the supports that are here in the community, the sister circles.
Tell me more about
organizations.
That. Is that, I'm sure that's kind of more like a home environment, not like in an office. It's more to make you feel comfortable and have someone to talk to, right?
It's a wellness, evidence-based wellness programs, physical and mental intersecting. We partnered with Doctors Gaston and Porter, who are with the Gaston and Porter Health Improvement Center. They're out of Washington, D.C., in implementing the Primetime Sister Circle here in Philadelphia. Said in 2011, that's the birth of the Creating a Legacy of Wellness, Mind, Body, and Spirit initiative.
I gotta just jump in.
In partnership with over 100 organizations and churches.
Seeing the pride on your face right now and how much that just touches you to talk about that moves me. It really moves me. I can see the emotion right here firsthand.
It does. It provided us, I've been doing this work a long time now, okay. And so to be involved in a program that is effective and scientifically proven, which we did, effective in reducing blood pressure and weight and helping women deal with their issues of the stigma and opening to talk about their issues and their needs and their trauma and personal experiences in a group setting. Initially, yes, it was face-to-face with these experts, the psychologist, the nutritionist, the physical fitness expert. COVID came. Mm. COVID came, and we know what occurred.
Hey, to that point of COVID, what have you seen how folks have changed from COVID? Because COVID, for everyone, it was stressful. Has there been maybe an uptick with mental health issues post-COVID? What are your experiences?
I mean, what we saw was essentially a second pandemic. The rates of mental health treatment seeking and mental illness skyrocketed, right? I mean, we think about the things that drive worsening of mental illness or development of it. Stress is huge among them. Isolation is also really toxic. And I think a lot of people were more isolated than they wanted to be.
Well, we were talking about that on our last Better Off podcast about for older guys that you kind of just naturally isolate yourself. It's smarter. And what you want to do is to have friends. And it sounds so easy, but sometimes it's not as easy as it sounds. You have to find groups. And that's one of the things that we were discussing in terms of health. Being isolated and not having that group camaraderie is really damaging to your health. And I could see firsthand how it would be an issue for mental health.
Yeah, it becomes a vicious cycle, too. Particularly for depression, when you're depressed, you don't want to be around people. But that's kind of what you need. And so it becomes its own kind of toxic spiral, right? And like you said, during pandemic, if you really couldn't be around people, there wasn't really much of a choice. It was very hard. If there was a good part about what we saw mental health wise, it was probably the rise of telemedicine for behavioral health. Mm-hmm. I mean, prior to the pandemic, I think what we saw at Independence was maybe 10% of our members were getting telemedicine for behavioral health. During the height of the pandemic, it was over 80. It's still in like the 70s now. Wow. So I think people have found ways to, and I think it's great, right? I mean, it gets rid of some of the stigma. You don't have to go in person. Some people are still uncomfortable doing that.
I'd feel so much more comfortable talking about me and just how I feel at home. Yeah. In an office, I don't know, I'd be closed up and just kind of a little buttoned up, and it just, I would want that environment. So I love that telehealth can make those connections and help you open up.
It removes barriers. I mean, so you don't have to commute, you don't have to take as much time off of work. And one of the great things we saw is it actually improved a little bit of the health disparities that we see. Mm-hmm. People in neighborhoods that are traditionally not well served by in-person care access behavioral health much more kind of evenly than before the pandemic. So that was great too. So it, like I said, if there's a little bit of a silver lining that we saw, it's probably that. Now it's not for everybody. Some people really need or want in person, but that was a great development.
What have you seen firsthand in the community post-COVID? Have you seen folks struggling a little bit more?
Absolutely.
Wow.
We have seen that. And what's encouraging is that the community seems to be coming together. I'm talking about IBX. I'm talking about the Department of Behavioral Health, the City of Philadelphia. I'm talking about programs and services reaching out to the communities. As you know, we have a violence issue as well. So there is a coming together. I think that there is also more of a willingness by the institutions, be it governmental, private hospitals, etc., to discuss with a new term. I'm going to use a term. I was getting ready to put
all
my
right, educate me.
I was getting ready to put my fingers up, and that's not what I'm supposed to do on TV, right?
You can do anything you want here. This is a safe space.
Braiding is a new term that is being used, and it's we've been operating in silos. The Department of Health, the Department of Behavioral Health, the Department of Health and Human Service, the feds,
the
etc.
All these organizations,
all of these entities, and the Blue Cross, and the Hahnemann Hospital, and the Penn Hospital, Temple. We've been operating in silos. We must braid. We must come together. There is an intersect between mental and physical well-being. We cannot separate it. Is that having an impact on our violence in the community? Are we looking at that? Are we hearing the voices? So we partner with the universities on programs, on research, and develop programming. We work with, like I mentioned, Drs. Gaston and Porter. Foundations are, and I'll give a shout out to El Xavier Foundation, who is supporting our Millennial Sister Circle program. And a shout out to IBX on the study that was done by the National
Blue Cross Blue Shield
around millennials. That data was helpful in moving forward and really, really zeroing in on the issues. We have Millennials Advisory Group.
Hey, real quick, what is that study? I don't know about it.
You want to share?
I can. I remember it. Right? It came up right before the pandemic, interestingly. Mm-hmm. So some of the attention it might have otherwise gotten kind of got sidetracked, I think. So this was called the Health of America Study. It was a collaboration between Blue Cross Blue Shield Association and I'm trying to remember. It was a major accounting or actuarial firm did some of the research. But what we saw was that millennials compared to prior generations, I think everybody that watches the news knows they're financially not as well off as other people. What we also saw is that they're health is poorer than any prior generation at the same age. So compared to Gen Xers and Boomers, their mental and physical health was poorer, right? So we realized that this was a generation that was really maybe needs a lot more attention because shape, if you look, you know, long term and carry that forward, there's a lot of bad outcomes you would have by having such poorer health outcomes when you're that young. So
one of the things that I gathered from you is we have all these different organizations across our community that want to help. What's the way to tackle some of that from what you brought up about that study that my generation, because I'm a millennial, what's the best way to, I guess, help me here? Help me kind of get on the same page that if I'm having some issues, I can reach out to someone or maybe help one of my friends have a conversation with him or her. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think some of this comes down to what you were talking about before, the overlap of physical and mental health. And just to say, when we talk about the millennial generation having poorer health sort of metrics than other generations, about eight of the top 10 were behavioral health conditions. So that's clearly a focus, but they affect each other. We know that if you get your depression or anxiety treated, your blood pressure or diabetes often improves. So part of that's because you can take better care of yourself. Some of it's actually biological, right? And the reverse is also true. Sometimes your behavioral health doesn't improve until you're physically healthy. So I say that because there's probably no wrong way into that conversation or into getting care for yourself. I always tell people that one of the best places to start, you ask where to start, is probably talking with a primary care doc. People don't often think about that.
I wouldn't, right.
But when I talk to primary care docs and I tell them I'm a psychiatrist, their response is, I feel like I do that all day myself, right? And when we look, probably about half of the antidepressants, for example, are prescribed by primary care docs. They're seeing a ton of this. One of the things we've been doing at Independence is trying to support them better. So we've been funding programs to have social workers and psychiatry time in physical health offices. So many of the hospitals around here have that. So if you went to, say, Penn and talked to your primary care doc, they could have you talking with a social worker that day, probably. So, I mean, that's really pretty great. There's not a long wait list. And that's an attention to your whole health, because your primary care doc knows about your physical stuff, your behavioral health illness, right? So we're trying to spread those kind of models around too. We've also been partnering with other companies, one's called Quartet, with a lot of our primary care docs. So if they need you to get an appointment, they can use that as another support for them. They don't have to find somebody that's taking new patients. They can refer you to them, they get you connected. So we're trying to make these connections to make it as easy as possible. Also, you could, if you're an independence member, you call us. I would say if you're not, you could call your insurance company. We've been trying very hard to have people get off the phone with an appointment, right? So not a list of people, not here's who you can call, get off the phone with an appointment. People have this moment of bravery sometimes, mm-hmm. back to stigma. Mm-hmm. Right? If I decide I'm gonna finally call, let's make that the last one they have to make. Let's get an appointment then. Let's not have, because if people change their mind, right? We want to intervene quickly.
Well, my friend's going through that right now. I'll tell you guys a little story of what my friend's up to. He has problems sleeping. I don't know if it's insomnia. I also think it's some mental health issues, because he actually has panic attacks, like really bad panic attacks every once in a while, and it's stress. And then I literally see him for about 2 or 3 days, just not, he physically can't sleep. And so I started that conversation with him. I said, have you talked to your doctor about that? And he said, a little bit. I explained I couldn't sleep. I said, but have you explained that you have panic attacks, that you have some other stuff going on? And he said, no. And to that point, I'm trying to nudge him along a little bit to talk to his doctor, or his doctor didn't really help him with getting some sort of sleep aid. I said, hey, there's got to be other avenues. Like, for example, what would you do, Dr. Connolly? In fact, you know, maybe talking to a psychiatrist and going from there, because what I've gathered from both of you, this intersection of both mental and physical health is coming together, and we're really starting to focus more on that. And so that's one of the things I'm hopeful for, that, you know, he moves it along, and I'll use this conversation we had today to do that. And I bet for some of the work that you've seen in the community, you've helped folks get to where they need to go.
Yes. And I'll use the Sister Circle again. The launch of our program literally was at the African American Museum, and we basically had the launches occur in community-based organizations and churches with attendance over 100, and wow. We were really, at each of these locations, we were really surprised. But it was finally an opportunity for them to come into a space, non-judgmental space, they felt, to receive information that was speaking to them. And we targeted Black women and 40 and above, okay? And why? Because the blood pressure, the heart attacks, it's all of these, those issues, those disparate conditions were higher in that population group. So as a result of that, they asked, and we had waiting lists. There was an opportunity for them to enroll. We had the speakers of Dr. Gasson and Porter came, and they spoke and provided information about the results of the studies. They had received funding, basically implement this program in about 6 different cities, and Black Women's Health Alliance was selected for that. But the data led us to implementing the program. And we did see the voices of the women participating, and we saw the results showed it. To a point, to implement these programs, it was not easy. Initially, we were on a fast track. I became stressed.
Because you're so invested. I feel so much.
I became stressed. That was on a very tight timeline, and it wasn't alone. We were on a very tight timeline. But I saw what occurred with the women who participated in that program as far as self-esteem building, seeing hope, taking on hope, physical changes in their health, reductions in blood pressure, loss in weight.
Wow.
I said, I need Sister Circle And I did. I enrolled in one of the sister circles. And so I know firsthand the benefit of having an environment. And this is not just for Black women. Let me say this. Dr. Gaston and Pearl Porter, they're ones to say that some of their white sisters have said to hint them, we need a sister circle. We
My
need
mom
a
would prime need it.
Yes. We need a sister circle. So to be honest, what is happening, there are more and more programs. There are some partnerships that are in fact occurring between possibly Dr. Gaston Porter, as well as here in Philadelphia. We've partnered with some organization with special population groups, being substance disorders, but being HIV, et cetera, to implement and provide opportunities for healing and being in this space and benefiting from it. But yes, it's the results are there. The literature shows it.
And what have you seen firsthand around the community with your time with IBX of these different programs? Are we getting more programs like this to help folks out?
I think we are. I think we probably still need more.
Wow.
And more than that, I think what we need is probably better communication. I think there's a lot of this is true of these kind of programs with lots of other things. There's a lot of resources. It's hard for people to know about them. Right. And I recently was talking with the city, right? There's lots that we were talking about resources for elders and loneliness, right? That's become a big deal. There are actually more. I was surprised by the number of kind of services and supports that exist. It's just that nobody knows about them, right? And so I think one of the things we have to do is probably have more conversations like this, get together for more messaging, because I think there are many of the things you discussed I hadn't heard of, right? And I think it'd be nice to be able to suggest them, but,
absolutely.
But I have to know about them, right? So I think communication is going to be important for that.
We get to learn firsthand from each other, especially when you have someone in your family or a friend that goes through one of these programs and says, hey, that really helped me. Or you saw firsthand, you said, I want to be in this program. So let me ask you both some questions. I got some kind of fascinating questions. We touched on this a little bit with my friend. You know, what are you better off doing with a friend who is struggling? Just, is it all about how you approach that conversation and say, hey, I've been seeing this, what can I do? Or should I not even talk about what I've been observing? Should I come in with that conversation of, what can I do for you? It seems like you've been tired lately, or just help me navigate this.
Yeah, I mean, I think, kind of as I said before, having the conversation is the important part, not kind of standing by. I think of your options probably the second one, right? I think that, as we said, it's an uncomfortable conversation. I think we probably want to avoid telling people what they are or what they're doing. The natural reaction is to argue, right?
Well said.
Nobody wants to be told what they're, what they're like or what they're doing, right?
It's true.
But we can't argue with, I'm worried about you. You know, I you don't seem like yourself to me lately. You know, can I be helpful? You know, telling people I'm worried about you, I think, is something they can't argue with, because you get to be worried, right? Not them. So I think starting from that place, and I think it probably couches the discussion as a, I'm coming from a place of caring about you, not criticism, right? Which it can sound like if we're not careful, right?
It's easy to do sometimes, right? It depends on your personality. Yeah. So that's a great point, is just really maybe before you have that conversation, think about how to approach it. Maybe make some notes, right? There's nothing wrong with that, and kind of being prepared to go do that. I want to swing things over to, let's just say, me personally, yourself. What would be better off doing if I'm feeling overwhelmed? What would, if I came to you and say, hey, Brenna, I'm managing day to day, but I'm feeling like I'm just barely keeping my head above water. What would you tell me? How would you help me?
Let's have a conversation about self-care.
Let's do that.
Let's have a conversation about self-care and what that might look like for you. And in fact, let's include me in the conversation so that when we finish, I have a list of things for myself and maybe, and you have a list for you, and maybe some of the things may be the same and we can do it together. So that's the way that I would really approach it. It is really about self-care. One thing about during COVID is that because we were alone and in our space and quiet, I for me, and for me, it was a time for me to reflect on me in admitting and acknowledging my level of discomfort at times. I'm not getting up on my usual schedule and going to work and being busy, busy, busy. I was doing a lot virtual, but I was not having that socialization, you know? So what else could I do? I do think from COVID, yes, there were some issues that were negative. I think that it helped me and probably others understand that. Let me acknowledge that I might need some kind of support. And it's okay. And it's okay.
I'd feel really okay if I had you doing it with me. That we, you know, we talked about our self-care. Let's do this together. If I knew I had a friend that essentially is, I don't want to say helping me out, but I know we're both doing this together as a journey, that's going to help me commit to something. That's going to help me focus more and make me more dedicated. And is that something that you see where folks that are going through different things, when they have the support of maybe someone else or kind of someone else helping them along, does that make it, I would imagine that makes a difference.
I think it makes an enormous difference, right? I mean, I think that we're not so good on our own, frankly. Our brains are not real good at working out problems silently. I think that, you know, I think talking things through with people, even if it's not, you know, major mental illness, I think mm-hmm. it makes an enormous difference. Mm-hmm. But things like you said, if it's self-care or an accountability buddy for exercising mm-hmm. or things like that, it feels less like selfishness and more like a relationship, right? So I think it is helpful.
That's what it's about, yeah. Relationships. I mean, from your work and what you've seen firsthand, relationships, that right. goes, oh, you know what? I need to be in this program. Or that relationship helps move you along to get you where you want to go. Mm-hmm. So as we wrap things up, one of the last things I wanted to talk about is just to get some advice from you guys. Just in general, maybe something that's in your head we didn't talk about, or just anything you want to share with someone watching. Because we've talked about so many different things. I gained so much knowledge. I can't wait to, number one, talk to my aunt and also talk to my friend. But your thoughts, some final thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a lot about the need to check in with other people, and I think that's incredibly important. I mean, and holidays are a good time for that, yeah. Because when we start to see people we haven't seen in a while, sometimes it's a good time to check in, right? So I think everything we said was important there. I think it's important to check in with ourselves, too, uh-huh. right? I mean, I think that often we can get very busy and stressed. Some of that stress is self-inflicted, right?
I've been there. Listen, yeah. I hear you. I've been
and
there.
And we tend to think of things like self-care, like you talked uh-huh. about, or paying attention to our mental health as, like, what we do with our leftover time, but we don't have any, right? So I think we just need to prioritize that for ourselves too, right? So if we want to take care of other people or be healthy, we need to make sure we prioritize checking in with ourselves and taking care of ourselves too. So,
Brenda, what do you want to leave us with?
I want to follow up on that, really. There are, 24 hours in a day. Out of that time, how much do you devote to you? Can you take at least an hour? I have 3 sons who are very active.
I'm sorry.
Etc. Well, thank you. It was an experience. It was an experience, but I raised 3 sons. And I remember those times. I was working full time. They were very, very active.
You're taking the sports.
Traded off, yeah. Yes, traded off with their father and making sure that they again that I had. That was during time the nursing home days when I was operating nursing homes.
Yeah, you were managing. I can imagine the enormous pressure of just managing a nursing home, let alone family, taking everyone everywhere. I'm getting anxious just thinking about the place you were in.
Did I identify an hour out of those 24 hours for me? I understand. I do understand what that feels like. I learned from that. We deserve at least an hour or more for ourselves. Carve out a space, a time, an approach for yourself. Because if you don't do that, if you don't take care of yourself, what good are you for others? You know, it doesn't, the results sometimes are not the best.
I'm going to take that to heart. I'm thinking about where I put all my time in a day, and some days I don't have any time to myself, and I need to make that time. I really
You're important,
do.
Too.
All right, well, guys, you're both important. Tell us more where we can get in touch with both of you. Tell me more about your organization if you want to research a little more, or just reach out to hear more about some of those groups you told us about. How can we get in touch?
We have a website. It's www.pbwha.org. We have a telephone number, 215-225-0394. On our website, we have resources. You can hear voices of women. We have
who've been there
and talk about their provide their testimonials about the benefits of some of the programs that we offer. You can find out about prevention for teen dating violence. We go into schools. We have partnerships with schools where we go, and we have certified facilitators, most of them at master's level, into schools and in community-based organizations, safe relationships. That's and the program is Safe Dates. We have Girls Circle. Girls Circle focuses in on the whole issue around self-esteem building. All of those issues, a lot of the issues that we discussed today, from a prevention perspective. There are other programs, Gambling Away the Golden Years. You talk about the seniors and what's occurring now. They don't have to leave home. They can look at their phone. Everyone can look at their phones. Is gambling increasing? Yes, but there is a responsible way and approach for gambling. So in our Millennial Sister Circle program, we did pilot one, going to be rolling out pilot two in 2024, as well as some other primetime sister circles. So there is a way, if you have an interest in any of the programs, you can leave a message. Yes,
yeah.
You can leave a message on our website, and we will get back with you.
Speaking of websites, what's your website so we can get more in touch with?
So for us, it's ibx.com.
Easy enough, right?
It's a good one. Now, we have lots of resources there. You can go to that even if you're not an independence member. If you do are one of our members, you can call us directly as well. And there's also a personal website that you would have with resources there. A few other things that I really should mention.
Please.
Even though you didn't ask.
I want to hear. I got to tell you, one of the things out of the gate that really spoke to me today is that our local doctor, the doctor I go for my physicals, can help me with mental health. I never really thought about that.
Always a great place to start.
And get that right away. So tell us more.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is that if we're worried about someone being in a mental health crisis, we now have a national suicide and crisis lifeline. That's 988. So instead of dialing 911, we dial 988. So if you're worried that someone's really in a bad way, or if you are in a bad way yourself, that's the emergency line to do, and everybody should know that number as well as they know 911.
I'll take that. I saw that you brought a magnet. I'll hold that up so everyone can see, because to your point about this, it's not about just calling if you're close to doing something. You can call any time. You don't have to wait till last minute. These are folks that you can talk to at any time, even before, you know, you might make a decision that your family and friends would regret.
Yes, they can help you figure out what you might need. So it's a very important number to know. Everybody should know it.
All right, there it is, 988. And we'll leave everyone with that. Thank you so much for the conversation. Learned
so much
from both of you.
Thank
I have some homework for my family members here, and I just appreciate hearing from folks like you firsthand that have your pulse on what's going on, and it just helps me and everyone else. So thank you so much for joining us today on the Better Off Podcast, sponsored by Independence Luke Cross. I'm Drew Anderson. We'll see you next time.